Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, June 17th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
You spoiled, self-indulgent, willful, dirty-minded, liquor-ridden...
That does sound like me, except for the willful part, anyhow. Listen, buckle your seatbelts, sex fans, because Monk is in the house. That's right, Monk of TwistedMonk.com. He's located here in Seattle, but his reputation, well, that's international. You've seen him all over the freaking internet, on his websites, on YouTube, and Twitter. You've seen him at the Seattle Erotic Arts Festival. And you see him today, well, hear him anyhow, right here on DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Monk is the consummate bondage performance artist, who is nearly as thrilling to listen to as he is to watch. This incredibly sexy and oh-so-entertaining bondage artist adds his voice to the Sex Education series. As you know, in these podcasts, we are looking at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative sexual lifestyles. We chat with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world.
I'm loud, and I'm vulgar, and I wear the pants in the house because somebody's got to.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, and there's something else you should know. Monk is going to try to convince us that Twisted Monk does not describe him, but rather simply is the name of his company. Well, I beg to differ, sex fans. I mean, please. As you will soon hear, this boy is as twisted as his company's name implies. Monk invites you to enter his world and visit him at his website, TwistedMonk.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this fetish and kink series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there at the top of DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. And guess what? My Stockroom even carries some of Twisted Monk's products. Search for the Hemp Rope Starter Kit, and presto, you'll be tying folks up in a jiffy. You'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun, and I might say, easy. Yes, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show.
Welcome, Muck, and thank you for dropping by Casa Dick, don't you know. It's a pleasure having you, so to speak.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, nice people.
I'm afraid to tell you that there's also some not so nice, in fact, downright naughty people listening in. Would you like to say hello to them, too?
Why, hello, my lovelies. What are you doing in a place like this, talking to a man like me?
Well, we're going to get to that.
All right.
So it's good to finally connect with you. I've been a secret admirer for many years.
Thank you.
I've discovered from chatting with some of our other local celebrities, like Max and Lady Lydia among them, that the Pacific Northwest in general, and Seattle in particular, is a hotbed of perversion. Do you share this perception, or is this just wishful thinking on my part?
There is a saying when we go travel around the country that the streets are awash in blood and hemp. Seattle's got a great scene, and those two names that you just named, Max and Lydia, are two major reasons. Mm-hmm. Seattle has been fortunate enough to have several generations of kinksters. I hate that word, like old guard, I'm just making the air quotes, but we have several generations. Mm-hmm. who have really, really worked very, very hard to create a very open and welcoming atmosphere and to not let itself get fractured or become, I want to use the word kind of jaded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have been all over the country going to various conventions, and in some parts of the country, there is no scene because it's been pushed underground.
Right.
In Massachusetts, it is, what is the line they used? Welcome to Massachusetts, you can marry your same-sex partner, but you can't give them a spanking. So people would come out of the woodwork to get information because they couldn't have clubs.
Uh-huh.
And they were just so grateful for that. Versus, say, you go to San Francisco and there is so much that people are almost jaded.
That's right.
And so when we come down there, they're like, yeah, what you got? Oh, that's nice. Well, you know, we saw that last week. You know, what, so they're not on fire? Come on, everybody's on fire. So Seattle's a nice mix. And like I said, we owe a lot of that to people like Elena Gabosh and
exactly.
the Seattle Center for Sex Positive Culture. Boy, even back as far as like the Bondage Club, there's like this great history.
Mm-hmm.
Of these people who have made it so that me, I've only been in the scene for about 5 to 6 years, who allowed for me to come to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was not for people like Max and Lydia and Matisse and Elena and all of this other folks,
right.
We wouldn't have that.
It's supportive, too,
mm-hmm.
and encouraging. And
not as I mean, you get fracturing groups,
uh-huh.
and we hear this from a lot from our customer base. They always like, well, we want to have a play party, but there's this group over here who doesn't like this group over here, and the fags don't like the goths, and the goths don't like the swingers, and the swingers don't like the...
Yeah.
Say whatever you want about the Seattle Center for Sex Positive Culture. Whether you want to do something or not, there's always at least something going on there.
Right. It's and so true.
And so there's always something, and, you know, take, for example, one of Max's bondage classes are so inclusive that we can have gay leathermen, swinger, curious couples, things like that, can all kind of come into this class together. And so, yeah, it's they try very, very hard to be inclusive.
I'm appreciating that big time. I've now interviewed several people in the area, and first of all, it was really difficult connecting locally. I was finding much easier to connect with folks, you know, far flung, you know, South Africa and Europe and stuff like that before was able to connect here in Seattle, which is a curious thing. But anyhow, Elena was one of my early interviews, and she's such a marvelous woman. I just love her. And I'm doing two podcasts with John and Deanna of the Sharma Center.
Okay.
In fact, they're going to be premiering the weeks before you, actually. So,
oh, cool. Cool. I have not gotten to see it. I've only read about it. I'm actually really
very
looking
nice
forward to
space.
Seeing it.
Very nice space. So I've spent a great deal of time on your website, twistedmonk.com, as well as on your blog, and you have your hands full, so to speak. You eat, drink, and sleep this stuff, right?
This is my life. This has been my all-consuming passion for the last 5 years, to the point where I actually have my company logo tattooed into the middle of my back between my shoulder blades. I say that she's the harshest mistress of all. Twistedmonk.com is my company. My blog sort of documents this life that I had. I really had no idea when I started doing that this is what would happen.
Uh-huh.
None whatsoever, but this started in my garage 5 years ago. Thanks to a good story. My mother-in-law gave me my first book on rope bondage. And
thanks, Mom.
Thanks, my mother-in-law. All you have rope. She's an amazing woman. To today, I have Minion back at the Abbey where we make rope. Who I've got five of them. They're all toiling away, filling your orders. We are the oldest, largest bondage rope factory in the world.
Which gets me to my next question. You are the freaking Martha Stewart of rope bondage. I mean, you dye your own rope,
mm-hmm.
you assemble your own bondage kits, you also grow your own hemp, I assume?
No, we have it spun for us, so it's still technically legal. What we've done is we've worked with growers in Eastern Europe, and over the years, out of Romania, out of Italy, out of Spain, Germany, to really improve the quality of the harvests, to create, it's just cheaper to have it spun over there for us, and you still can't grow it domestically.
Right.
So we have that all spun up for us raw in the third world, Eastern Europe, whatever you want to call it, sent to my shops in Seattle, and then we do all of the finishing. We take this raw, rough hemp and do all of our little magic to make it beautiful colors, mm-hmm. to make it the right lengths, make it soft, make it ready for use in bedrooms.
Mm-hmm. So there's a significant difference between the raw product
mm-hmm.
that you get from your suppliers and what goes out
yeah.
to
actually,
your customers.
When I first kind of started doing this, there were a couple of guys who did this as sort of like quasi-business hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
But up to this point, most bondage enthusiasts would go buy a bale of raw hemp rope from
uh-huh.
the local hippie shop,
uh-huh.
and they would do this very physical, labor-intensive process
mm-hmm.
to soften it, to
uh-huh.
take it down from sharp, scratchy rope to something
uh-huh.
that's soft and supple and usable.
Uh-huh.
That's when we started. Part of our, I think, real success is that we opened the doors to all these people who wanted to try this, but didn't have the time or the tools or the inclination.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do all that heavy lifting for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Martha.
Something like Martha Stewart. It's a good thing. It's it is a booming cottage industry. It
uh-huh.
is. I have, in the 5 years I've done this, I have seen countless competitors rise. I have buried countless competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Seen you know, conventions, helped author books, helped to distribute new bondage books,
yes.
sponsored events. We have a wall in my shop that's covered with cards and letters from all over the world, from customers,
mm-hmm.
from every continent but Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
If we can find some kinky penguins, I'd really like that. But saying, thank you, you saved my marriage. I never knew I would like this. When my partner came to me the very first time, I was scared, but I went to your blog and read about how you and your wife became kinky and explored it, and that made it less scary for
mm-hmm.
me. Or I'm discovering, you know, polyamory or kink or my sadism or whatever, and I really enjoyed reading about how you came to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is. It's this huge industry, at least for us, thank God. And every day I kind of shake my head and go, I cannot believe that we're actually doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And the odd parts are things like buying lockers for my employees.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought after about lockers and shopping for health benefits and contemplating, well, God, maybe we need a 401k.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it used to be, my first person who helped me came and he was working for rope.
Mm-hmm.
And we bartered under the table.
Right.
I made sure he was fed.
Yeah.
Now we're big. My bankers come and visit me in suits and stuff like that. And it's like, oh my God, I'm respectable. So, yes.
One could spend hours on your site just watching the numerous free how-to videos. Can we talk about the production of these videos? Why do you do them, and how often do you make them?
Let me start by saying I'm really not a bondage teacher.
Ah.
Okay? I'm not a teacher. I believe, like, Max from Bondage Lessons
right.
is a teacher. He's the guy who taught me. He takes great pride in showing people things. What I believe I am is if I can produce a video, I came from the film background, so
right.
everything is very visual to me, and part of our success has been to always embrace new technology.
Mm-hmm.
So with YouTube coming emerging, we quickly leapt onto that,
mm-hmm.
emerging technologies. And we said to ourselves, we're having these customers coming to us saying, wow, I really want to try this, but I'm scared.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to start. These
right.
books, I don't know.
Right.
And so we went, well, God, if we could just make a handful of videos where you show the things that you have been taught by other people
mm-hmm.
and get them excited, demystify it,
mm-hmm.
and make them think, okay, oh, I can try this out. This
and
is
not
amazing.
Only that, they're pretty.
They're beautiful. My tech team is amazing. I am so fortunate.
But I mean, like the knots and
mm-hmm.
you know what you do with your rope is beautiful. I mean, it's not just the function of tying someone up. I mean, it's beautiful, lovely.
Well, thank you. People come to rope bondage for a lot of different reasons,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably why it's got such a universal appeal
mm-hmm.
because you have people who come to it who come to it from the artistic. That's how I first came to it, was from the artistic standpoint
mm-hmm.
of the line and the way the colors set against skin and for photography. Then we have people who come to it for the engineering aspect of, mm-hmm. you know, wow, I'm going to hang a person by one leg in the air and fuck them. How am I going to do this without breaking a leg?
Uh-huh.
What's the physics of this? What's the physical right. challenge to put through the body? The sadistic aspects. People come to it for all these different reasons. Mm. But in the end, I think also, and the reason why like the videos are so popular is that for most people and most of our customers, they're not the kind of people who are going to go to a leather convention.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They're not the people who, they may or may not go to a sex club.
Mm-hmm.
They may be, you know, they're like a couple in the Midwest or some red state or some suburb. Maybe they have a kid or two. They want to try to branch out. They want to try to explore some things. And wow, that single tail looks scary, or blood play look, whoa, I'm not going to go there. But God, who hasn't been tied up with ties before?
Right.
And it's soft, and it's pretty, and oh, look, he's tying his wife up, and she's smiling. Look at the big, goofy smile, and they're happy. And he's telling us to have fun and be safe.
Hmm.
And that's for the production. That's why we made it. And I figure with the videos, if I can get somebody excited to go take a class or go buy a book, mm-hmm. I've done my job.
So you learn from someone else or
mm-hmm.
some other people.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't come out of the womb knowing how to...
Well, I do have several Boy Scout merit badges. I didn't really understand why I was so good at lashing bridges.
Uh-huh.
Man, I could lash rope bridges, tripods. I really liked it. And sailing, was really good at that. No, I spent a lot of my time, in fact... how kind of the company came to be, in a lot of ways, is a lot of thanks to Max at bondagelessons.com.
Right.
Because
he's brilliant. He's such a big hero of mine.
I went to his 101 class. I had some rope that I had made. Because backing up, well, we can get that story. But and kind of talking back and forth, said, well, you know, maybe you want to sell some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so he encouraged me. He taught me a lot. He taught me so much about safety. From then. I started taking, you know, learning under Midori, who taught me like theater and flash and like how to think in like three-dimensional bondage terms.
Right.
Then I started traveling the country, going to shows to vend, picking things up for more bondage tops. People would come to the booth and we just kind of swap and geek
right,
out.
Right, right.
And eventually I tried to kind of like the way I tie, take the safety foundation that I learned from Max
mm-hmm.
and the theatrical stuff. And the how to think in three dimensions as a rope top from Midori, I could like find my own sort of, this is where
right.
I'm comfortable at.
Right, right.
So that's kind of how I learned it.
Mm. So that's basically how a nice boy like you got all wound up in this?
Ah, wow. Where do you want to start? Nice boy like me... For those of you who have gone to my blog or read my personal history, I came up out of the tech world.
Mm.
I worked for several large research corporations. You're probably running software on your desktop. They're from Redmond.
Let's see, who could that be?
Who could that be? Yeah, yeah. I actually am the only guy in history who actually called a VP there the load his mother should have swallowed and kept his job. My claim to fame, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. I escaped the tech world after doing that, working for space defense, things like that. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. This was when the whole dot-com bubble
mm-hmm.
imploded.
Mm-hmm.
And... thrashing around, exploring like photography. I came from like an artistic background. My mother's
mm-hmm.
a visual artist. Exploring photography, exploring antique photography.
Mm.
The sepia tones with the hand-painted accents. And
right.
I had gotten to a point where I had painted as many flowers, girls holding pretty flowers, as I could come up with. I thought, well, God, let me like rope or something. And my mother-in-law, God bless my kinky mother-in-law, gave me Midori's Seductive Art of Japanese Rope Bondage
wow.
as a gift. And I'm trying some ties, and like everybody else, I went to Home Depot,
uh-huh.
I bought some $20, 100-foot piece of nylon rope, cut it up, tied up my wife, and that's okay, this is kind of cool. So I flipped through there, and that book had a recipe for how to finish your own hemp. So I went through the whole finishing of the hemp rope, and what the hell, I got this packet of purple dye, and I put some purple dye in there, just because
mm-hmm.
I got to be weird. And I tie the missus up with that. And I think her line was,
my God, you must learn how to do more of this. Make more rope. I'm a
So I ended up going to Max's Bondage 101 class with this bundle of purple rope. Mm-hmm. And somebody went, wow, I've never seen purple hemp rope before. You want to sell that to me?
Interesting.
That's how we started from there.
So I'm guessing that monk is not your given name, but your nom de perversion. why monk and not Cuthbert or Athanasius or...
Somehow... Oh,
Seymour.
Cuthbert. Again, Cuthbert. Actually, it does kind of roll. It's just, you know, it's still like, oh, monk, you fucker. It still works well. No, actually, when I was about 14, 15 years old, I grew up in a very religious home, and I answered the call, as it were, and thought I was going to be a missionary. And started directing my life in that direction to be a, we were evangelicals. And so I did mission work, was starting to go to, planning on going to religious seminary, things like that. And my older brother started referring to me as the monk of the family.
Ah, interesting.
And so monk just sort of always stuck. Hmm. Once I started the company, you know, they just kept calling me monk. And the whole twisted monk is actually twisted's the rope.
Right.
People are like, oh, are you like the twisted monk? I'm like, no, my name's just monk. I'm just this guy, monk. You know, my mother calls me monk. My lovers call me monk. My accountant, my lawyer, and my psychiatrist don't, but that's beside the point. So, yeah, that's how I came up with this name, and it just kind of fits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't get weirded out if people don't call me that,
uh-huh.
but what does get me odd is when people go, are you... the monk? Like, I'm just this guy. I'm just monk. Just monk is fine. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we share a similar background. I in seminary, in fact, was ordained a Catholic priest.
I know.
And
would, wow.
I practiced for 5 good years. I was in the good graces for 5 years and then wrote my doctoral thesis on the sexual attitudes and behaviors of gay Catholic priests in the active ministry back in 1981, where before there was such a thing as gay priests, and that blew me out of the water. And I understand people say, you know, you were the gay priest?
The gay priest.
The gay priest. Well, no.
No, I'm a, but yeah. Wow, that took some stones.
Yeah. Well, I actually was didn't know what the fuck I was doing, and it was probably just as well, because had I known what the outcome would have been, I probably got too timid and walked away from the opportunity. But anyhow, that's water under the bridge, and fought the church for 15 years, I might add.
Really?
And yeah, I still am a real priest, but I don't do active ministry anymore.
Well, so I can call you Father Doctor?
Yeah, Reverend Doctor. You
Reverend
can.
Doctor. Wow.
Put a smile on your face when you do that. So listen, I would like to turn our attention to something that I think is absolutely the most fantastic thing, and that is Monk, the performance artist. In one of the venues that comes immediately to mind, which is the Seattle Erotic Art Festival, where I saw you for the first time in action, live action anyhow, I was absolutely stunned. And I understand, although I wasn't there as often as I would like to have gone, that you spent like 8 hours a day for 3 days,
mm-hmm.
thrilling thousands.
I don't know about thrilling. Thank you. It was a really an unforgettable, momentous experiment and experience that we did. We rigged for performance bondage for 4 to 6 hours every day, 3 days in a row, with full film crews, a full stage. I sort of approached it as how would you two do bondage performance?
Yeah.
And so we sort of bombarded you with visual data.
Right. It was amazing. It was absolutely stunning.
I owe a huge gratitude to Clayton Hibbert of Seattle Erotic Art Festival. He's a performance director, as well as Anna, who is the director of the festival, for really taking a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I had a picture in like the very first Seattle Erotic Art Festival a bazillion years ago, and so I've always sort of felt this fondness for them. I had pieces in them when I was a photographer. Then when the company took off, I really stopped shooting. And I am an actor and a performer at heart. Give me a stage and I am at home. And the road shows, whenever we went to any event, whether if we went to the Folsom Street Fair or whatever, it was never, I always swore to myself, if I'm going to come and bend and open a table and put my company and my face on the line, I'm not just going to come. I'm going to go big or go home. Just, it's not worth it.
Right.
So we go to Folsom and we would bring suspension towers and we would stop traffic.
Which is hard to do at Folsom.
We would stop traffic. We would always make this big, lavish production wherever we went. I really like that. The company has grown to the point where I don't have to go on the road anymore.
Ah.
Road shows, while allowing me to connect with customers, is really hard on, you know, because we have so many customers now coming to us. And so it's this sort of having to rob Peter to pay Paul,
right,
where we have to stop filling orders to like make stock for other, you know, potential customers. And physically, it was about last year, I think it was, I made a promise to both my partners after like getting sick for like the 12th or 15th time in a row, bordering on exhaustion. They're like, just stop for 1 year.
Right.
Stop going to shows.
Right. Besides lugging all that.
Oh, yeah. You got to lug hemp across the country. But the thing was, while I don't miss going to shows, I miss the performing. I miss the stage.
Yeah.
I miss wowing and thrilling people. Yeah. So I approached the performance director last year. Thought, you know, it could be just a little bondage, you know, a little suspension demo, kind of, you know, it'd be kind of cool and flashy, you know. I got this one girl. She lets me tie her. She's really bendy, and she can flip around in the air. It's really cool. Eh, maybe not. This year rolls around. It's like, well, okay, we'll start talking. And we start talking about it. And it's like, you know, I like it, but I got to tell you that most bondage stuff that we see is really boring. Because the bondage top is really focused on the knots. And the girl's sort of standing there going, look at my boobies. And then they go, put her up in the air, ta-da, girl with big boobies. And then the bondage top kind of puts his hands on his hips and goes, behold, I am awesome. You know, it's like, it's kind of boring. And we want burlesque, we want performance. And so we kind of go thrash back and forth, and pretty soon it comes to this idea of like, well, I really don't want to make something that's really sterile. Instead, we wanted to create something like, let's create something that talks about why people like rope so much and how it connects people across genders, across sexual identities, across ages and sizes. And it's this great, the Binding Project is what we called it.
Right.
And we pitched it as this. It's like, okay, instead of just me going, behold, I'm a big cool rope top, check out the girl with big boobies, I said, well, what if we did boys? What if we did girls? What if we did all these things you've never seen? What if we, you know, brought in Cirque du Soleil style you know, trickery, as well as like warm sexual chemistry, so someone could stand by and see all these other ways instead of, I'm Lord Master Futa. Look at me in my leather pants. She has boobies. Did I mention the boobies? I'm on about the boobies today, sorry. So that's how we built, and that's why we built the Bindings Project that you saw at CIF.
It was amazing. And for the folks who haven't seen this, on is it on YouTube or any of that?
Well, we're currently in negotiations with YouTube. We've sort of run afoul of some of their censors, and so my lawyers are working with them, so I can't really go into that. We have a Bindings Project website that should be up in the next couple of days after I finish writing some text for it. We filmed everything. We made a film around
it. Oh,
good. So there's a lot of content that is, we're slowly seeping out. After CIF was over, because it was such a four-month endeavor for myself, my technical director, and my partners, that we all went, I don't want to look at this footage for a couple of weeks.
But the thing that it was so amazing, at least from my point of view, is that not only do you tie folks up and suspend them from the rafters, you yourself tie yourself up and suspend yourself from the rafters, and then you go after your prey, which is just like, holy cow.
I have this real hatred of boring bondage. Okay, I swear to God, I saw this once at a convention. This woman is tied up, her arms are spread up, spread eagle, above her head, and this guy has been spending a good 10 minutes working on a knot about at her midsection, and he has not looked up at her, and he has not touched her or made physical contact. And I swear to God, she looks up and glances at her watch real quick and looks back down at him. So I sort of sworn to myself that, like, I will never be boring bondage. You know, bondage is about the knots, the engineering is awesome, mm-hmm. but in the end it's about how do I connect to this mm-hmm. person through rope. Mm-hmm. So my rule of thumb is if I am not as exhausted as my partner is when mm-hmm. I'm done, mm-hmm. why the hell am I doing this?
Mm-hmm. Which gets me to the next point that I would really like to move toward, and that is that you apparently get off on this, and just mm-hmm. the way you talk about it, I mean, it's just mm-hmm. it's fascinating, but you get off on this literally and figuratively as much as the person you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So can we talk a little bit about that? I mean, the role of endorphins and
sure.
adrenaline
sure.
And the kind of bondage you practice?
Sure. Yes, I get high. I get very high, aroused in the moment, however you want to describe that, when I tie. What I believe that bondage, and the reason I think a lot of people flow to SM, is that we spend so much of our lives up in our heads, mm-hmm. and our bodies are just these machines that move our brains around. And that SM forces us down into our bodies, and it forces us to be present in our bodies. And that as bondage, you have to feel the rope on your skin. You, in suspension bondage, there is that, where is the stress? Can my body do this? Mm-hmm. I can make this comfortable, I can make this uncomfortable. Can I endure this position, and how long? Can I control my breathing? Can I control my panic? Mm-hmm. Can I face my fear mm-hmm. and get through that? So it forces you into your body, into the moment. And as a rope top, that for me is this huge electrical turn on, mm-hmm. because as you start wrapping people and you start putting rope on bodies, you get this experience back. They're giving you this thing back. They're in their body, and that response can be all sorts of things. Though it doesn't have to be this like hugely sexual turn on, oh my god, please, you know, tie me up and fuck me right now, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Let me tell you. But one of the people in the Bindings Project was a dear sweet friend of mine, who, she is what I refer to as my bubble popper. She has known me since I was a creepy single, you know, creepy swinger in the old days. And so she has always been sort of my conscience to tell me when I'm being a diva. Mm-hmm. She's not a small girl. Mm-hmm. She's a big girl. And when I asked her, I'm like, well, sweetie, I would like to put you up. And she's like, I've never been put up in the air. Mm-hmm. I would love to, and I would love to prove that I could. You know, mm-hmm. people could, because people mm-hmm. look at me and go, you're a big girl, you can't go up. And so we have this really goofy, playful attitude. Mm-hmm. And we're tying, and she's enjoying it. The endorphins are flowing. She's in her body. She's getting to fly around and be this beautiful, gravity-defying creature mm-hmm. that the whole world tells her, no, I'm sorry, fat girls can't do this. And so she's having a blast, and I'm having a blast because I'm giving this to her, and we're laughing back and forth, and we're making fun of each other. And so, yes, you get high. Your endorphins are firing, but it's that get into your body. Even when I tie, I feel my body. I feel how I move, how I wrap my hands around a body. Mm-hmm. You know, feel the rope against the skin as I shift. You'll notice, Aaron, who's ever watched videos of me tie, will notice I don't stand still. I'm always prowling and moving my body in, and using my legs or my shoulders to kind of brace things or pin things down. Mm-hmm. So it's a very kinetic thing for me. Mm-hmm. So yes, it gets me very high.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect that if you're doing this in front of an audience, you know, the roar of the crowd and the smell of the grease paint.
I read about this one moment in my blog at Seif. I love the crowd. The thing is, I also get this, you know, this wowed out when I'm doing it privately too. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just because it's about, you have the bubble, mm-hmm. and that bubble you, between you and your partner, that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And if you choose to share this with other people, that can add to it. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces that we did was a blindfold tie, where I'm wearing a blindfold and I'm tying a very, very, very good friend of mine named Sophia, who is mm-hmm. an accomplished rope artist and an mm-hmm. accomplished tier herself. And we had practiced this just enough so we were comfortable, but we didn't want to be mechanical.
Right.
Because we wanted the sense of tension between us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing this, and I'm suspending her blindfolded, which is really dangerous, people. Don't do this, okay? Don't try this at home. And there's a moment where, you know, her feet are coming off the ground, she's fully in the air, and I hear the MC across the way go, let's just stop what we're doing and look over at Monk's booth. Uh-huh. And I hear the crowd, you kind of hear that roar, and they just, this pause for uh-huh. just a second. And then they started again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh. That was better than any orgasm I've ever had. It's just, wow. So, yes.
So I remember talking to Max about this very thing, and you know, I said there must be some gratification involved in doing the technical things well. And he said yes. He said that, you know, like standing back from, you know, the artistry that he performs. And then I said, but it must be something totally different to do it in front of a crowd and in you know, at a show or, you know, at a demonstration. And he goes, yes. And he goes, and I said, well, it would be like painting, you know, in your studio and then bringing your paintings, you know, to a show. I mean, it's a completely different experience altogether. And mm-hmm. So I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
It is. It's a different experience. I think it's sort of like it uses the same muscles
uh-huh.
and you draw from the same places, but the outcomes are different. Mm-hmm. Where the outcome for performance is, you know, to hear the roar of the crowd.
Yeah.
The outcome in private is to hear something else.
Right.
Be that to give someone this experience they never had before,
yeah.
to take them to a certain place,
yeah.
to push a boundary, to have really good sex, whatever that
mm-hmm.
might be.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same sort of muscles. We do it for the same reasons,
right.
and we still get down into our bodies.
Right.
But public versus private, it is different.
Right.
And, you know, it also, it's a two-way street between the people who are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I practice bondage with in public, we get off on that because
mm-hmm.
we are performers.
Yeah.
And so not only are we getting off on our interaction through rope, we know we are being entertaining.
Right.
And that tickles the entertainment gene.
Yeah.
I have people who do not want to be performers. And
mm-hmm.
so when we play together with rope, it is between us.
Right.
And so in some ways I talk about bondage tops, think it more like you always have an audience. It's either an audience of one,
mm-hmm.
your partner, or an audience of 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Always stay focused on your partner, what your partner needs,
right.
creating an experience for your partner. Because if you create something really awesome for that audience of one, the audience of 10,000 will love you.
No kidding.
The worst thing I think a bondage shop can do, especially when it's playing in public, is pander to the audience.
Right.
Drop your focus from your partner
mm-hmm.
and play to the audience. Cardinal sin.
Interesting.
It's a cardinal sin in my book, because now that's dangerous.
Mm, interesting. Well, our time is up for today, and I have so many more questions to ask. Can I invite you back for next week?
Sounds like a great plan.
There'll be an audience, I promise.
Okay. Ooh, audiences, people, you like me.
So before we go, could you give us your website address and walk us around just briefly?
Certainly. Well, the main source of all that is rope in my world is twistedmonk.com, which is where we sell all of our rope and all of our videos and books and things like that. If you want to see a glimpse inside of my life and the life of what it takes to run a company like this and sort of the adventure that I'm having, you can go to my blog, twistedmonk.blogspot.com. And from there, that sort of branches out into our YouTube feeds, our Twitter feeds, our bloody, bloody, bloody.
Wonderful. So until next week, then, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Cheers.
Bye now.
Great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Monk and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom.
I've tried with you, baby. I've really tried.
Well, when it's over, it's over. So listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself, like some of Monk's rope or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you just better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Not to worry. Take a look at my brand spanking new sex toy review site at drdicksextoyreview.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com.
You're a monster. You are.
Okay, let's have it your way. Hey, and don't forget to look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Well, that's even better. Over and out.